barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Wednesday, September 7th. We are in full swing college football mode. And, man, it feels good. As much as the offseason is fun, you have some great topics, great conversations. You know, you get to go off topic a little bit, talk about some current events, talk about other sports. You get to talk about other things. There's nothing like college football season. And so here's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about Texas-Bama. Right? Can Steve Sarkisian smack Daddy Nicky? Can he get take a little insider info? He's got Quinn Ewers. He's got his innovative offense. Can they take a swing at Bama? That's the question here. Not are they going to win? That's just a moot point. But can they take a legit swing at Bama? Can they expose maybe a weakness here or there? Can they keep it closer than the 20-point spread? That's really the question about this game. We're also going to talk a little bit about my guy Hendon Hooker and the Tennessee Volunteers as they go into Pitt and try to make Desmond Howard look like even more of a fucking clown by beating, not even upsetting, their favorite, by beating the Pitt Panthers and Pat Narduzzi. And then Brian Kelly, Chris. How about Brian Kelly already just scorching in LSU country? I mean, the reporters are taking shots at him. The players are just completely out of it. Like, the culture's terrible. Everything's falling apart for Brian Kelly, it seems, right? And so I want to talk about that to lead the show. And then we got a couple other things to talk about. Chris is going to get the coach speak translated to end the show. And I'll give you my thoughts on what coaches said and what they actually mean, right? I do want to start by mentioning our two sponsors, two partners of the program, both with the same promo code, both in a sports space. One is MyBookie. You see the promo code down there, Menace. You go on MyBookie for all your sports book needs. You can bet on props, bet NFL, college, soccer, you name it. It's all there. Great platform. Promo code Menace gives you a free deposit match. And then we had the company that I just found out about, Prize Picks, which is all fantasy plays, right? You play different entries on will you have over seven catches or under five catches, and you can throw them together in a parlay, essentially. It's totally different than MyBookie. It's more for the fantasy world. But I convinced them to use the same promo code Menace for the same deal, a deposit match. Put in 500, they'll give you 500, up to 500. So go check out Prize Picks. Go check out MyBookie, and get it rolling, man. Sports gambling's fun. Fantasy football's fun. We just had our fantasy football draft the past couple days. We have our Menace tier has a fantasy football league. Mm-hmm. And I think I have the third best team in the league. Chris had dead last. I just want to throw that out there. The worst draft in the Menace fantasy league. Chris Drew coming in hot. This man took Ja'Marr Chase, number one overall. In a PPR fantasy football league, he took Ja'Marr Chase, number one overall. And I also want to call you out, Chris, because Chris obviously does a lot of the back end work, a lot of the administrative work. He set up the drafts, set up the leagues. We have two different general tier drafts because we had too many people for one massive league. Somehow, Chris Drew ended up with the first overall pick in both fucking drafts.
It's just crazy because, like, I don't know how to change it, and I tried. And Zach, do you think I would give myself the first overall pick to draft Ja'Marr Chase in both of them?
The thing is, you didn't need it, but I think you were trying to make a statement. Like, I'm big Chris Drew up in this bitch. I get the first pick because I said so, and I'm going to flex on you, and I'm going to take a receiver.
Yeah, because, hey, do you know who the two greatest fantasy seasons ever were by?
Who?
Calvin Johnson. Cooper Kupp.
Ever, any position.
Yes, of any position. In fact, last year's Cooper Kupp season was the greatest fantasy season in PPR in the history of fantasy. He broke every record. Most
why
points
you take
scored,
Cooper
most
Kupp,
points
then? Why did you take Ja'Marr Chase?
Because there's no way he can repeat that year. So in my mind, I firmly believe, okay, who is the best receiver in this? Because the best receiver in the fantasy draft is going to be the best receiver. Mm-hmm. And the best receiver is going to score the most points. Watch this. You better watch. When he's ripping off back-to-back 30s, I want an apology from everybody. Anyway.
Oh, well, let's talk about it, Chris. Talk to me about Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly goes in his post-game press conference yesterday, and a couple reporters are running late, and he decides to take a little jab at him. And the one female reporter, I don't know who she was, she said, maybe we'll show up on time if you actually win. Taking shots at Brian Kelly, Chris.
And you saw the look on his face. He said, I didn't think it was about winning. Well, it's like, fuck, how would you know? And this is crazy because, Zach, like, already, it's like when tires are wearing really thin. Like, Brian Kelly got to campus on some rubber bands. And now there's distrust there. And a reporter taking a smug shot at him for him being smug when she knows that he could pull her credentials at any point. It's like,
the thing about it is let's be honest about what Brian Kelly's job is at LSU, right? It is to change the culture. And through that process, there's going to be growing pains. And that's what you're experiencing now. Like the way Keyshawn Booty was acting during the game on the sideline, like scrubbing social media, some of the shit that's going on. This is a part of the growth process. Mm-hmm. Like players acting like that is an indication on how bad the culture is. The media acting like this. These people are paid to report on LSU. Like LSU fans are subscribing to their site to cover the team. To disrespect your head coach like that when you did show up late, you fucking clown. Like, get to work on time. Like, this is the real world. You can't show up 5 minutes late. I wouldn't let him in the fucking room. I tell him, hey, get out. We already started the press conference. If you want to be here, show up on time. And guess what? They're prettylittletigerbait.com. That's going to be a bad fucking day because they have no quotes from Brian Kelly. They have nothing from the press conference. I bet you her ass shows up on time next time, her and the other gentleman who showed up late. So I got a real problem with this going down because you watch a press conference with Ryan Day or Urban Meyer, Nick Saban. No one would dare make an audacious claim like that or audacious statement at them like that. And you know why? Because they're all little fanboys and girls. The Buckeye beat are all fanboys, right? They are there, and this is not derogatory on them. They do a great job, but they are there to deliver positive news on Ohio State. And if Ohio State is not doing well, they'll try to give an honest take at what's going on. But they are paid to essentially report on to report on that football team. Why would you disrespect Brian Kelly after one game with a statement like that? And I mean, it's ridiculous that. The media is trying to already turn on him. It's like they are unaware of the fact that they have had 1 year where they were relevant, and it was because of Joe Burrow and Joe Brady. Like, as much as you want to give Eddie Orgeron credit, Eddie Orgeron was awful at Ole Miss. He was awful before Joe Burrow. He was awful and got fired after Joe Burrow. Now, in true GOAT mode, Chris, I don't know if you saw it, but he was on a podcast or doing an interview, and he said when they fired him, he said, okay, perfect. What time do you want me to leave? And what door do you want me to leave out of? Like, that was his response.
Because
like,
he knew how big his buyout was.
What? He says, 17 mil? Perfect. What time am I out? And which way do you want me to leave? I will fucking gladly just, you want the back door, side door, front door, wherever you want me to go, I'll go. For 17 million, I will stand in the middle of Tiger Stadium, butt naked. Like, just whatever you want. Give me that 17 mil.
Could the response also be kind of like a... like, we miss Edo, like, you'll never be Edo. Because that's kind of the feeling I'm getting from LSU already. Kind of the fan base has never bought in on Brian Kelly. You know, I think he's a good football coach, but the culture thing's an issue. Obviously, we reference that no coaches went with him from Notre Dame to LSU, even though he invited just about all of them. And then this reporter. First of all, when you watch Ohio State press conferences, I don't know if you've watched them, but I watch them, and the live stream always starts about 10 minutes before the press conference starts, and you can hear all of the beat writers already in the room. You can make them out by hearing their voice. 10 minutes before, they have the live stream set up. So to walk in late, yeah, it's right after week one.
Yeah, it's completely unprofessional.
It's a fuck you. It's like, we miss Edo is what kind of what it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, it's disrespectful. It's disrespectful for the, to the coach, to the other reporters who showed up on time. And like I said, I mean, Brian Kelly went about it the right way. He tried to make a joke about it, like, we'll throw a party at my house.
But he's so unlikable is the issue.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can't stand the guy. I mean, he's a complete fraud and phony, but I will, you know, you got to be honest about it. I guess that's the difference between this show and fucking, you know, some of these other beat shows is that I'll just be honest. I don't care. Like, if Ohio State, like I saw in the chat, Ohio State had the mega recruiting weekend and Buckeye beat reporters were trying to defend that it was the right choice. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? Mm-hmm. It was an epic failure. Like, under no circumstance would you look at that with a clear conscience and no blinders on and say that was a successful idea or concept with hindsight. No, and you had beat reporters defending that. It's no different than here, right? These people, Brian Kelly can be a fraud and a phony. And he also can be a pretty good football coach, and he also can be right in this scenario, right? It's, and for the reporters to be taking jabs at him right now already is just crazy, because he has a long haul journey to try to flip this culture, and it's not going to happen overnight.
Mm-mm. Well, my final question to you is, likability a skill? Because if Ed Orgeron says the same thing last year, who says a word?
Nobody. Because he is the king of the bayou, right? They loved Eddie O. And that's what it is, right? They don't acknowledge him as the head coach at LSU. They think it was not a good fit. This $10 million man rolls into town with a fake accent. I mean, he's just not likable is what it is.
Mm-hmm. In other news, Zach. Wait, do you think that woman loses her credentials?
No. Nobody. I'm telling you, I would. I'd be like, hey, she's done. Pull her, because these credentials are like, they are gold to beat reporters. Like, if you aren't credentialed, I mean, literally your site's credibility is you being allowed to go to that meeting. I mean, that's and you make, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars because of that credential. And so that is powerful. And that's why you look at Buckeye beat reporters and Alabama reporters, like, they won't challenge Nick Saban because they have struck like gold by having that credential and getting credentialed, and they don't want to lose that.
Yeah, I mean, that credential then makes them famous, makes them a B-list celebrity just naturally. So that's why you see people defending the way they do. Zach, ESPN, Pat McAfee, College Game Day. What do you think?
Hey, you know what? Kudos to ESPN. They got something right, because despite the fact that his show has blocked me on Twitter for some unbeknownst reason to me, I think his show is outstanding. I think he is excellent. And so, Game Day, this is purely a reaction to the ratings, to all the backlash about Lee Corso, to Desmond Howard's dumbass. And literally, I would not be surprised if Kirk Herbstreit is not behind the scenes pulling strings. Like, listen, this is dying. This is going to die. I'm struggling up here. We need help. And they went out and got the fucking man. Pat McAfee, I might turn it on now. And that's crazy, because I hate that show so much. But Pat McAfee's that good. And I think Pat McAfee and Kirk Herbstreit would be dynamic together. So I will tune in Saturday. Now, if it's still awful, if I got to listen to Desmond too much, if they parade Lee Corso around, I will turn it off. But it was a great move by ESPN, because now I am the biggest ESPN hater alive. And I'm going to tune in because I want to see how Pat McAfee does.
I'm interested to see how much they carry the show. Because, right, I mean, immediately you would want him with Kirk pulling it. You want them to be kind of the lead dogs of that show, so absolutely, you can go toe-to-toe with Urban Meyer at Fox News and then eventually Tom Herman at CBS. Zach, my question is, do you think this is the beginning of the phase-out of Lee Corso?
Absolutely it is. This is absolutely, though, slowly but surely he'll have less and less airtime, and it'll get to the point where all he's doing at the end is picking the game, saying who's going to win, putting on the head, and I think that's great. Because Lee Corso has earned the right to be on the show. He just doesn't need to be, you know, embarrassed the way he has been by ESPN by allowing him to talk so much. I mean, it's just, he had a stroke. He can't talk that well. That's okay. He's still a legend. He's still a goat. He still was so entertaining in his career. So I think you leave him on the show. Let him play a little role to still be a part of it. Just don't embarrass the guy.
Yep. No, I agree. I'm happy. This was a good move. I know ESPN and Pat's relationship has always been pretty weird, but, you know, bringing him back on College Game Day, kudos to him. He did a really good job. And now we'll know after Saturday, and then we're going to go ahead and power rank the pregame shows. Of course, ours would be number one if we had one. But again, we do not yet. So Fox, so here's what I'm rooting for, Zach. Because honestly, like what if ESPN blows Fox and CBS out of the water, and then me and you get a call, and then you get to work side by side with Tom Herman? A lot of people will watch that. I would watch that.
File that under things that will never happen.
I'd love it though. I'd love
you imagine, but you put me any of the other ones. Put me on the show with Urban. Put me on the show with Tom. Put me on the show with Dan Mullen. Like any of those three.
Put you on the show with Desmond Howard. Fuck it.
Fuck it. Yeah, Desmond Howard. You want to see a rating spike, buddy? I will push back on every fucking take they have.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and you and Desmond Howard have already got in a Twitter scuffle.
I've literally been in a scuffle with all of those personalities. Desmond Howard, Urban Meyer, Tom Herman, Dan Mullen. The only guy I have it is Kirk Herbstreit because he's a good dude.
Or Pat McAfee because we don't fight punters. That's well,
I haven't, but apparently I have. I got blocked for no reason.
He feels it. Oh, Zach and Coach JB, Saturday morning show. That would be so insane.
JB's so NFL oriented though, but that would be insane.
Yeah, he likes calling kids fuck faces too often.
Slap dicks, fuck face, all of it.
He's soft fuck. Dude, whenever I watch JB, I get offended. I'm like, damn, like, I'm soft too.
No doubt. I know this much. If they put me on actual TV, they would have to have the sensor button ready. Just beep, beep.
Well, you know how it works, Zach? See, this is how I came up. So there's what they call a dump button. Then there's a 6 second delay, right?
Yep.
And so that's like one of like the first jobs you get is you just have to sit behind the board, and then whenever someone cusses, you hit the dump button, and then during commercial breaks, you hit the rebuild. So if you ever notice during commercials when there's like that long kind of like half second pause between commercials when it's black and like feels like it takes a little bit longer, that's because they're trying to build up the dump button because they're close to live. Because if someone cusses back to back pretty closely, it fucks it up.
But that's what makes it more amazing that Lee Corso said fuck it live on game day, mm-hmm. and it didn't get dumped. They were like, no, let it go. It's Lee. Mm-hmm. He's allowed to say fuck it. The FCC doesn't care if it's Lee Corso.
No, they probably didn't. All right, Zach, we got some football. A couple of things. You dropped a breakdown yesterday on the Patreon. Yeah.
Really, so here's what we're doing. We have on Patreon the Colonel level or higher. The link is right under Chris, also in the bio. I've got a coach's film breakdown where I sit there, I think it was 40 minutes long roughly, mm-hmm. and I break down the Ohio State game and I talk about different players, what they're doing, and try to give you my insight into college football. That's what it is. I'm going to do Florida, Utah today or tomorrow. I haven't decided yet, but I'm going to do at least two games a week, and then we're going to keep growing with it, get more creative and break down a quarterback, right, over multiple games, or break down, compare quarterbacks, right? And so we're going to do that in the coach's film room on Patreon. It's a VIP perk if you're interested. The feedback was crazy. I mean, mm-hmm. people were like, oh my God, this was worth every penny. That was the best video I've ever watched. Like people loved it. And so that's what we're delivering to the VIP world of Menace to Sports. So if you're interested, the Patreon link is in the bio. It's also right below Chris, patreon.com/Menace2Sports. And come watch film with me. Come learn football. Or, you know, maybe you know football as well as I do, and you just can enjoy some decently high level conversation about the game.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it, Zach. And it's funny because a lot of Notre Dame fans have been kind of on Twitter saying they watched the game back and Ohio State was getting away with holding the entire game. I want to ask you, the Ohio State offensive line, were they able to hold up because of talent, toughness, or were they getting away with some holding?
It's all of the above. Every offensive line holds. Every defensive back holds. Like, holding is a part of the game. What you can't do is it can't be egregious. Like, you can't, as you're holding them, as they try to get away, you keep holding on, and now you get your arm extended. That's where you get flags. No different than defensive backs. They can't grab you with both hands. They can't impede your running, but they'll grab you and hold you, and when you get in and out of breaks, they'll put their hands on you. It's not the NFL. You can get away with that stuff in college, and everyone does it. So, yeah, in the breakdown, I said a couple times, there's one play, a stretch play, where Luke Weipler held pretty bad, and it should have got called, and I said it live on the breakdown. There was those, and there was some of those for Notre Dame's O-line. It happens. It's part of the game. Mm-hmm. And honestly, if you're a violent, great player, it's hard to hold you legally, right? Because as you're being violent and getting away from that block, their arms extend, and that's where you get flags. I used to tell my players all the time, defensive backs can't hold you if you play violent. If a kid tries to hold you on a curl route and you throw his ass on the ground, he's going to have to tackle you or let go, right? That's the only options. So there's times where people get held, and I blame it on the other player. Like, bro, why are you letting him hold you? If you don't want him to hold you, you have to play more violently to get the flag. And once you start getting the flag, they'll stop. That it's as much on the defensive lineman as it is on the offensive lineman when holding occurs.
Yeah, it's like, can you be dynamic and twitchy and, like you said, violent? Because that's kind of where you see the jersey tugs. Like that's literally where you see it. Zach, a couple of things I want to throw up on the Jumbotron. Thank you, Michael, for the five. If there's one thing I look forward to before cardio, it's this podcast. We love you, Michael, man. You
appreciate you, man.
You be riding. Mr. P, you cannot complain about no run game and a weak defense. Then when it appears to be fixed, find something else to complain about. Fans shaking my head. Go Bucks. We absolutely can complain.
Well, here's the thing, right? If it's all about what your goal is as a fan, as an analyst, like if you just are here to jerk off Ohio State and celebrate Ohio State's what they do well, that's fine and dandy. That's great, right? I'm here to look at every single game and every team and say, what do they need to do to hoist that golden trophy, right? Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't matter what they did. It does matter what they did really well, but they need to fix the things they didn't, right? In order to win it all. And that is the goal at Ohio State. So you can be honest about what they didn't do well. And it's not derogatory or negative. It's just, hey, this is what needs to improve. Because I believe CJ Stroud deserves to hold that bronze stiff arm trophy. And he needs to improve a couple facets of his game to hoist that trophy. And if he doesn't, he won't. No different than Ohio State will not win the national championship if they don't get better in certain areas. So as a true Ohio State fan, if you really want that level of achievement, you absolutely will talk about the things that need to improve.
Well, Zach, that's what this show is. Like, you are a former Ohio State coach. So when these games end and things don't go exactly as they were supposed to go, as you thought they would go, like Ryan Day's not going back into the Woody and saying, damn, great job, guys. We did great. Next right. one. No, it's like, what the hell happened here? Our offense was not up to par with what our standard is. And so you justifying that and talking about it is all that we can ask for, kind of as Menace Army, I should say. Thank you, Gorgon. The answer to your question is hell no. No one beats Daddy Saban. Wait, what does Lee Corso say? Not so fast. We saw Zach Calzada and Jimbo Fisher do it last year.
It's a fact.
Elk 70, $2. Thank you. My guy, what an OG. Y'all joined General Tier. Breakdown is worth the price. Yeah, it was incredible. I was
there you go. That's Chris. That's what we call a testimony.
Mm-hmm.
That's testimonial.
A testimonial. All right, Zach. We got some big games this weekend, man.
Massive.
Some big games. First of all, before we get to the other one, Pitt plays Tennessee. You know, battle of the transfers. You can say that a lot because that's kind of what goes on now with the transfer portal era. Pat Narduzzi and Desmond's pick taking on a little bit of tougher opponent, I believe, and Hendon Hooker and Josh Heupel's, you know, Tennessee team. They're fast-paced. They're fun to watch. If you have not watched Tennessee, go watch them because they are wildly, wildly entertaining. Zach, what are you looking forward to in this game?
Well, one, I'm looking forward to a Tennessee win. And I think this win will be one of those, I don't want to say program-changing wins, but it'll be a momentum gainer where Hendon Hooker will get a little momentum. The Pitt program going on the road against a somewhat tough non-conference opponent, you know, at Pitt, getting that win will boost the confidence level of these players, the team, the culture, the program. And because when I watched four games today back, all four of these teams, their week one game. And when I watched back the Pitt and West Virginia game, it was not quintessential Pat Narduzzi, right? Mm-hmm. They couldn't stop West Virginia's run game. West Virginia, you know, averaged, well, where is it? They gave up 404 yards rushing. West Virginia's leading rusher, C.J. Donaldson, averaged 17.9 yards per carry, seven rushes for 125 yards. Pat Narduzzi has a track record of stout run defenses. That's what he's known for. And contesting throws, right? Being very, you know, hands-on, very aggressive in coverage. And I didn't see that from this Pitt team. I think they're weak up front, and I think Tennessee will run the football. They are well coached. They only had seven missed tackles, as I mentioned in the week one breakdown. But I just don't think this is a Pitt team, because what did they do last year? They had a decent defense. Pat Narduzzi had a solid defense. They had Kenny Pickett, Jordan Addison, and an explosive Mark Whipple offense. Neither is the case anymore. They don't have that same explosive offense. The Pat Narduzzi's defense has taken a step back. So I think Tennessee goes in and wins the game. Because you watch Hendon Hooker in week one, and I know it was Ball State, right? But this to me is a Hendon Hooker reveal party, like a gender reveal party, but for football talent. Like, he is going to come out and you're going to see the best version of Hendon Hooker to date. You watch what he did against Ball State. Josh Heupel has him doing heavy play actions. He had 18 pass attempts on play action and only 7 on drop back pass, right? So he's utilizing and leveraging the run game that I think will do well against Pitt and leveraging that to open up passing concepts in the play action game. And that's not because of deficiency for Hendon Hooker, because he was 72% completion percentage in play action and 71% on drop back. So he was executing the drop back game and was still effective in drop back. But they're really leveraging the RPOs and the play action game to help Hendon Hooker get some more open looks. And so I really think he's going to have a game, and he's the intermediate killer. We talked about it last year. He led the ACC or SEC in intermediate throws, 10 to 20 yards. He was the number one quarterback in the SEC in that area. And he again was 80% in game one on those, that throw distance. So I really think that this is going to be his coming out party.
Zach, in the RPO kind of attack that they run, who does that put the most stress on? Does that put more stress on the corners, the defensive end, or the linebackers? And who do you expect them to pick on kind of moving forward?
So it really is going to put the most stress on the safeties in Pat Narduzzi's defense. A lot of times it puts the linebackers in consternation. But the way Pat Narduzzi structures his defense is he wants those linebackers triggering. And so he plays what, you know, a quarters coverage, if you want to call it that. It's truly like zero almost. It's like man coverage, but in drop back pass, you get some zone drop help underneath. So if you bite those linebackers in play action or RPO, they're going to bite. And then those safeties are the ones that have to take away the RPO. And so that's where you really can kind of attack them. We did it in 2014. If you go watch the film, we did run action, try to get that line, not try to, you knew he was going to bite. It was basically a token fake to ensure he bites and then attack those safeties. And that's what we did so well. That's what I think Hendon Hooker and Josh Heupel are going to do in this game.
So you've got Tennessee kind of taking this one and getting off.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be anything convincing. I think they win by 7 points. They may probably cover the spread. They are on the road. But the one thing that makes me nervous about this Tennessee team is against Ball State. Now, they had 11 missed tackles. Ball State is not a dynamic team. They do not have dynamic players. To miss 11 tackles, double-digit missed tackles, when you're an SEC school against a MAC team, that's very problematic. So I'm concerned about Tennessee's defense. Now, hopefully they get it fixed. Hopefully that was kind of a week one jitters, like just sloppiness that they get out of their system and they tackle better against Pitt. But I've told everyone from day one, the better tackling team wins 95% of the time. And Pitt is a better tackling team right now. That's my one concern here. That could be a major issue against a more talented Pitt team. I mean, Pitt is far more dynamic with the ball in their hands than Ball State.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So Tennessee is a 5-point favorite and the over-under, Zach, is 69, kind of based on what I think is going to happen. I don't know how good this Pitt defense is. They don't feel as violent and kind of as fast as you know, former Pat Narduzzi defenses. I don't know how much of that is on the talent or if just kind of how the game's gone. But if Hendon Hooker can kill them in the intermediate realm, I don't see a world where is this game. Like, even if they do struggle tackling, like, I just trust.
You just look at that number, right? That Vegas's number is saying the final score is going to be 38-32 Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's basically conceding the fact that Tennessee's defense has struggled in week one against, and not struggled overall, but struggled tackling. And Vegas is concerned about their defense. They think that Pitt will be able to score points on Tennessee. So this is kind of a shootout type of game. I mean, a 70-point game, an SEC, you know, if Georgia played Pitt, the over-under would be more like 48. And now it's 68. So that just tells you the difference in defenses from Tennessee and some of these other SEC teams. So I think it's more like 35-28. I would probably bet the under and Tennessee to cover. And while we're at it, if you want to get to our handicapping, which I haven't done it yet, we haven't run the numbers, but I would say a teaser here would probably be a great idea. Tease Tennessee and tease the under to get those numbers a little more advantageous. But yeah, I think Tennessee wins the game by 7, and I think they do a little bit better job on defense than Vegas thinks.
This is a 3:30 game and it is at Pitt instead of being at Tennessee. How much does that favor Pitt?
Well, it's always nice to be home. It's always nice to be home for the lack of travel. You have your fans. You're comfortable. I don't think it's going to be any type of dynamic atmosphere where Tennessee needs to worry about, you know, crowd noise. And don't get me wrong, Pitt has a decent game day experience, but it's not like when they're going to go to Alabama or go to play Georgia. Like, it's not going to be an atmosphere that they need to concern themselves with, especially guys like Hendon Hooker that have played in some pretty toxic atmospheres. It will be just another Saturday for him.
I would have loved for this game to be at Tennessee at night. Like, I just want to see an environment there. I want to see Hendon Hooker play in front of people. But I don't think a lot of people this year, Zach, have even watched Hendon Hooker because kind of that week one game was on a Thursday. And I believe Pitt and West Virginia were playing at that same time, maybe. Yes, they were. So nobody turned them on. Nobody turned them on. So this will kind of be his
first
stepping
stone. It was a tough game to find. I mean, Tennessee Ball State is not must-see TV, national coverage.
Someone in the chat said they live near Ball State. All those dudes are just a whole bunch of drunks on that team. Nobody really came to play football. They are just there to party. Zach, I know you watched the backyard brawl. Did Keaton Slovis show you anything that was impressive? Or I guess maybe, I don't know if you watched.
I studied it this morning. I mean, I thought he threw the ball decent. Nothing to write home about. Nothing that I would be afraid of if I was a defensive coordinator. I thought he was just an average to above average college quarterback. And their weapons on the perimeter don't scare me if I'm Tennessee. Honestly, if I'm Tennessee, what scares me more than anything is our own fundamentals. Like, you can't miss tackles like that. Yeah. And so I don't see anything that poises a threat to Tennessee on Pitt's sideline other than Tennessee just not, using proper fundamentals, tackling well, being in the right position. Like, Tennessee has not had a good defense for the last, fucking decade. And that just needs to change if they're going to achieve the level of success that they're trying to achieve.
I really think Tennessee needs this win. Like, I think this is a really good stepping block for them as they move into SEC play. Like, they need this, Zach.
They need to have a momentum year. They need to go 9-3. They need to have a year like that to double down on the recruiting efforts and the NIL deals and Nico coming in. Like, they need this season. And this game seems like that turning point, that swing point, where if they can get this win on the road, a good, salty, solid win, and come back and get ready for SEC play, they have a chance because then they have momentum. If they lose this game, it could be epic disaster. Mm-hmm. This season, and that would be them not parlaying some recruiting success with success on the field and trying to level this program up.
Yeah, the one thing you don't want to feel like going into SEC play is a fraudulent team, and I think a loss to Pitt could have them feeling like maybe they're frauds. And that's obviously not what we wanted. And we believe that Hendon Hooker is uber talented. So I'm excited to see that one. Zach, the other game, the other game, we got the Mullet and Sark. Got the crew, got the gang, all their towed cars coming out for this one. Texas versus Big Bad Bama.
Well, here's the issue. So Texas has no chance in this game. Let's just start with that. I mean, they don't.
This has been so anticlimactic, Zach. You've opened up both previews with, no way Pitt wins this game.
I'm just honest. And here's why they don't. I went back and watched Texas week one, and let me just give you my initial thoughts. One, Sark is he's the dude. I mean, his offensive game planning, the RPO stuff he's doing. I mean, he's doing like read option with double arcing tight ends. One of them's protecting Quinn Ewers. The other one's running a wheel route and he's hitting him on the sideline. Like, he is doing so many creative things to attack a defense that I'm excited to see his plan to attack Nick Saban, because I think that's going to be most the biggest thing we learn is how would Steve Sarkisian attack Alabama? I don't think he's going to win, but he's going to show you, if he had better players, how he would beat Alabama. And the reality is this: Texas's offensive line is awful.
They're so awful. Bad.
I watched them play that game against whoever it was, UL Monroe, and they struggled against those D linemen. Like, Will Anderson Jr. is Dallas Turner, Chris Braswell. These kids are going to feast on this offensive line. And that's just the reality of it. Pete Golding runs this 3-4 defense with just freak shows. Like Will Anderson Jr. rushing the quarterback from an outside linebacker position. And it's not going to be fair. It's like a lion battling an antelope. Like, it's going to be a bloodbath. That being said, I love some of these players on Texas. I mean, Bijan Robinson had 13 touches for 111 yards and 2 touchdowns in week one, 7.1 yards per carry. He was an 1,100 yard back last year. If they had a line worth a fuck, he would be an impact player in this game. And I'm here to tell you this. You want to talk about Quinn Ewers? He is talented. The stuff he did in that game, I mean, he was 1-for-5 on deep balls, 3-for-5 on intermediate throws. Like, he struggled a little bit, but his arm talent is insane. He's flicking his wrist. I mean, body out of position, flicking his wrist sideways to a swing pass, and that fucking ball goes. Jumps. I mean, it jets out of his hand. Like, I think this kid, with start coaching him up by the end of the year, will be one of the better quarterbacks in the country. And I've never said that about Quinn Ewers. Everyone that watches the show knows that. I have been a Quinn Ewers critique or a critic, I guess. I have. But what he did, and I know it was against UL Monroe, just his his skill, his tools are exceptional. They are. He is as advertised. If he can get it going up here, he's going to be a great player.
Yeah, the ball jumps out of his hands. Like, he had a couple of throws down the seam that really he really drove into some very, very tight windows. And I'm with you. With him and Sark, I mean, that's going to be a plus.
And you look at what Texas has on offense. Mm-hmm. Like, outside of the O-line, which has always been Texas's issue. I talked to Vance Bedford, who is an All-American at Texas and coached there with Charlie Strong. And his whole point was, in our conversation, was everyone's so excited about Quinn Ewers and Ajayi Hall coming in and all these skill players. He's like, the issue is the offensive line is not where it needs to be. And the defensive line is not where it needs to be. And that's the issue at Texas right now. I mean, I love Jatavion Sanders. Jordan Whittington, I recruited hard as shit. I think he has a chance to be a great player. Xavier Worthy is a dynamic player with the ball in his hands. Ajayi Hall is coming back from a suspension to play against his former team in Bama. I wish they had Jaleel Billingsley, but he has a 6-game suspension for some shady ass NCAA violations at Bama that no one will talk about. Isn't that amazing? he has a 6-game suspension at Texas for some shady shit he did at Bama, but no one knows what it is.
Nobody.
It was obviously something illegal, but Bama's not in trouble. This kid and Texas are being harmed by it. It's funny. I wish they had him though, because he is also a talent at tight end.
Zach, I'm a little worried, though. I do think they are talented, but, like, is Nick Saban in tune with what Kirby Smart did to Dan Lanning? Like, is Nick Saban going to try to embarrass Sark, like, kind of in that same? Because, I mean, this whole week, Zach, even though it's only Wednesday, people have been talking about how dominant Georgia was, how that's the performance of the week, that's the number one team.
Listen, Bama's they're going to go pedal to the metal and go as hard as they can and try to score as many points as they can and try to not – I mean, it's football. Nick Saban has no chill. And the reality is this. I think Bama's – I think this goes without saying. They're unbelievable. Like, their defense is star-studded. They have 2, 4, 6 players in the secondary that I think are excellent players. I mean, DeMarco Helms and Jordan Battle is the best safety duo in the United States of America. They have 4 corners that can absolutely play. Malachi Moore, Eli Ricks, Kyrie Jackson, and my guy, Kool-Aid McKinstry.
Kool-Aid
up in this bitch. I mean, they have their secondary is an NFL secondary. And so it's going to be tough to move. Well, you think about it. You put that secondary to make it take a little longer to get open. And then you let guys like Will Anderson Jr. just unleash and pass rush on a young, inexperienced quarterback like Quinn Ewers. This is a recipe for fucking disaster.
I mean, they're going to have to use a screen game. Like, they're going to have to get Bijan Robinson involved in some form or fashion to try to slow down the pass rush. Because the last thing you want if you're Texas is to see Quinn Ewers on his back 4, 5, 6 times and then have each one of those and be like, damn, I can't wait till this is Arch Manning in a couple years. Because, the Manning family is going to be paying attention to this. Like, everyone's going to be paying attention. You don't want the mullet on his back for this entire game. You simply don't.
No, you can't. I mean, and the good thing is I think Sark is such a good offensive mind and offensive football coach that he won't let that happen. I mean, he knows their strengths. He knows their weaknesses, if there is a weakness on this Bama defense. And he is going to make sure that he protects his quarterback. I mean, he is not going to let him get sacked 10 times and just get obliterated in the pocket. He won't do that. This is an unbelievable kind of benchmark game for Texas, because Texas is not back. Texas is trying to get there. They're on the journey, and they really need to recruit the fuck out of offensive line if they ever want to sniff it. Because, and I would tell you, let's talk about the other side of the ball for Bama.
I was talking about Bryce Young.
So let's talk about Bryce Young. First of all, leading rusher in week one, 5 carries for 100 yards, highlighted by a 63-yard touchdown run. Just makes me yearn for that in Buckeye Nation. It really does. But he threw over 5 touchdown passes and only had to throw for 195 yards to get those 5 touchdowns. That just shows you the field position game that they played. Their defense was dominant, special teams, and they had short drives to score. He did not need to throw it all over the field. But Chris, Bryce Young was 0-for-1 on deep balls. They only threw 1 deep ball, mainly because they didn't have much field to throw deep balls because they started so far down the field. But he was 1-for-8 on throws outside the hashes over 10 yards. Those are NFL throws, what I classify as NFL throws. He was 1-for-8 on throws over on NFL throws. And this is the Heisman Trophy winner. And this has been my issue with Bryce Young from day one. The big boy throws, he struggles. He struggles at big boy throws. Like those Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, those big time throws, Matt Stafford, howitzer arms, like I could go on forever. Josh Allen throws.
Is it Kyler Murray-esque?
Yeah, a little bit. He's a good athlete. He's a dynamic player, but he's not going to kill you with his arm. Like when he got blitzed in week one, his effectivity dropped from 75% to 50%. So if there's an answer for Bryce Young, it's you have to blitz him and you have to keep him in the pocket. You cannot let him run around. Make him stay in the pocket, put some heat on him, and make him make a big boy fucking throw to beat you. I don't know that Texas has the personnel to do that, but that is the formula to beat Bryce Young. That's what Georgia did when they beat him in the national championship. That is what you have to do. Yeah. You have to heat him up, keep him in the pocket, and make him make NFL throws.
What did LSU and Auburn both hold him to under 20 points? It seems like teams with disruptive defensive lines really throw Bryce Young off. And I believe interior pressure, because obviously, that the forces rollouts and a lot of running around. So I am curious, does Texas have the personnel to make him kind of bail on stuff? Like, does Texas have the personnel to stop the run and then force some third and longs, or just going to be kind of like, yeah, we're saying this, but again, it's when he dices them up.
It's their interior defensive line that's subpar. They have the kid Demarion Overshaw, or whatever his first name is, who I think is an NFL football player. And they don't have the personnel or depth to do that consistently to this football team. They don't. And I mean, you look at Bama. I mean, they have quietly reloaded that skill position, right? And I know it was dog shit competition against Utah State, but Trayshawn Holden, Jermaine Burton, Jace McClellan, all had 2 touchdowns each, 6 touchdowns. And then, they got this kid, Tyler Harrell, who I don't think is going to play because he's dealing with an injury. He was in a boot all week last week. But they have skill on the perimeter. It's not Jameson Williams, but they have skill, right? And then Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be one of the premier backs in the country. That's what I'm most excited about. Other than the fact the offensive line is going to be putrid, Bijan Robinson versus Jahmyr Gibbs, you're talking about two of the premier backs in the country, two of the top 4 backs in college football are going to square off on Saturday. Now, Jahmyr Gibbs just has a little different view in front of him.
Yeah, I mean, that could end up being like running back 1 and 2 in this upcoming draft. Zach, it is minus 18, Bama favored by 18.
Yeah, so Vegas has the over-under, I think it's 64, 65. So they're telling you this is like a, 42-24 victory for Alabama. And I think that's about on par. I could see Sark, because he's such a great coach, I could see him coaching his way into a 17-point loss, a 14-point loss. But it is not. I mean, honestly,
Pause. What a crazy ass sentence. I could see Sark coaching his way into a 17-point loss.
But honestly, Texas fans will turn into Notre Dame fans overnight. Like, yeah, well, we beat the spread, bro. Look at that. We beat the spread. Fuck Ohio State. Like, that's what Texas fans will be like. Yeah, Bama ain't all that. Just give us a year or two. They couldn't even cover the spread.
Yeah, I want that on a shirt. Spread beaters. That's what I want. That's what I want. What a ridiculous. And you're right. You're not wrong there. All right, Zach, it's time for Coaches Speak. You ready, brother?
I'm ready.
I got a couple quotes. So I have a couple from Jim Knowles, and then we haven't done any on Perry Eliano. And I listened to his press conference, and I was like, okay, I like my
Bearcat, the Cincinnati Bearcat.
Right. Sauce Gardner and Kobe Bryant.
Kobe.
I love those two dudes, man. And Kobe's brother, Christian, obviously, would love to have one of them on the show. But anyway, I have Ryan Day, actually, not Jim Knowles. Ryan Day and Perry Eliano. So first quote, Ryan Day was asked about Jim Knowles and the Buckeye defense. And this is what Ryan had to say. It was the start we were looking for sure. Watching the film, they played really hard, really fast, and really decisive. Interesting word there.
And in layman terms, in coach speak, what he meant to say in his head was, thank God we finally have a competent coordinator and these fucking, it looks like a real defense and we're actually like stopping people. Fucking thank you. That's what he really was trying to do.
He was asked about the defensive rotation and he went on to say, I think you're going to see more depth being played moving forward.
Well, I would hope so. I mean, you're not going to survive a season. And so that's about as accurate a statement as you could have. Basically, he's saying we're going to play more players than we played on Saturday. I think it comes down to those players mastered the defense a little bit better than some of the other kids. And that's why they had to play all those snaps. But you will not survive a full season if week 12, you're playing 3 linebackers. You need a 4th linebacker. Like you need Tommy Eichenberg needs a break every now and then. Kid went every fucking play. Like you have to at some point be able to roll a guy in every now and then to give a kid a blow. So they absolutely need to play more players, more personnel on defense. And you look at a guy like Josh Proctor. I mean, he missed one tackle, kind of got benched, mainly because Lathan Ransom was playing so well. But by Wisconsin, Josh Proctor needs to play 30 plays.
Right.
It just has to happen.
No, I agree. I mean, you can't have Tommy Eichenberg out there for 50 snaps. And we heard all offseason about how good Chip Traynham was. We didn't see him out there for a single defensive
play. But we saw him on a kickoff. Film breakdown that's on Patreon, boy. He came down and smacked the opening kickoff, smacked their returner. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy that you would expect to get on the field eventually, too. Right. Right.
And he plays that same position. Ryan Day was asked about the offense and what he saw. He said, we could have been more efficient on offense against Notre Dame, but the attitude was excellent, and so was the toughness.
So we could have been more efficient means we should have called more run plays, right? We should have relied on the run game a little bit more early. And then the attitude was excellent and toughness was excellent. It was essentially saying, although we didn't struggle, the players didn't like fold. They didn't get negative. And when he talks about toughness, he's solely talking about the offensive line. On that, again, not to keep going back to the coach's film breakdown that I did, but on the one touchdown run that Mayan Williams had, Paris Johnson Jr. and Donovan Jackson just imploded. I mean, just mowed down the left side of Notre Dame's front. And it was, I mean, just beautiful. You're like, wow, look at that shit. I mean, just mowed them down. So yeah, the offensive line, A+ grade. Justin Fry, A+ higher so far. And that's what he's specifically shouting out the offensive line without saying it.
When talking about the defensive line and kind of things he was happy with when he watched film, to see the defensive line winning the line of scrimmage was excellent in game one.
Yeah, I mean, just Michael Hall Jr., Tyleek Williams, just to see them dominate up front against a pretty good. I mean, Notre Dame's offensive line is a good offensive line. That wasn't like we're talking about Texas now. They were a good offensive line. Not great, but good. And the Larry Johnson's group absolutely just dominated them.
That's got to be such a relief for him. To not get pushed around in the trenches because like we've had the talent. And last year, like one of the things that everybody was doing was blaming everybody, you know, except for the coaches for the D-line stuff. And it's like now we got new coaches, kind of similar players, and they're winning the line of scrimmage. That is really, really nice. He was asked about what he saw from CJ Stroud. He said, I think if you watch him move, he's moving different. His body looks different. This is in regards to how he moved and saw the field.
I thought he was outstanding. Other than not crossing the line of scrimmage with the football, I mean, he extended plays with his feet. The rare occurrence that protection broke down or he just didn't like the feel. It was collapsing a little bit. He felt a little leakage. He got out of the pocket and he threw on the run better than I've seen. I mean, I don't want to be overreactionary, but some of those throws that he made on the run were exceptional. I'm talking like wow plays. And so, yeah, I agree with Ryan. He looks different. He's moving different. Now, if they can just get him to go north instead of always east and west, it'd be a hell of a fucking deal.
They asked him about opening the season with a top five opponent. Ryan Day said, looking back, it was a great idea to start the season with a top five opponent, but he thought it was a terrible, terrible idea on Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, why would you ever want to do that? You always want to have a preseason game or two to get ready to get your team some game experience before you go to a top five matchup. I mean, no one in the world wanted to play that game week one, but now that he got through it and got the win, which was their only goal. Their only goal was just to win the fucking game. Didn't matter how, they just need to win. It's like the AP poll comes out and Georgia jumped Ohio State and Ohio State fans are pissed. And it's like, it doesn't fucking matter. AP polls are about as useless as the paper they are printed on. Like, Georgia could be one. Ohio State could be seven. As long as Ohio State wins every game, they will be in the playoff and then control their own destiny. And the College Football Playoff Committee sets the actual rankings. So the AP poll and coaches poll are literally the most worthless exercises that happens in college athletics.
Heard. Definitely heard. I got a couple from Perry Eliano as well, because we don't really get to talk to him. So obviously leading up to the season, Zach, there was some worry about where Knowles would be. Like, we don't want Knowles in the box because we want him to be on the field with the coaches and, you know, that whole dynamic. He ended up obviously coaching in the box, and Perry was asked about that. And Perry said, everybody on the sidelines got ice water in their veins. When we get to when the lights are on, nobody flinches. There was absolutely no panic.
And that's just, this goes back to the conversation we had before we knew what he would do is, Jim Knowles has complete confidence in those players and those coaches that are on the field to have ice water in their veins, right? To be like stone-faced, coaches and players, mm-hmm. when adversity hits, that they will push through, and he doesn't need to be down there to drive that ship. He's got co-captains that can drive that ship for him, so he can get a bird's eye view of what's going on and call a better game. And it's always the issue, right? If you have this strong leader on a defensive staff, you want him in the box so he can see the game and call the game. But if he has to be on the field to drive the culture on the sideline, then that's more important than seeing the game from the box. What Jim Knowles has said and what Perry Aliano is saying is they've got those fucking dudes on defense that can drive that ship while he's upstairs calling the game. And that's their best chance at success. So it's really, I guess it's satisfying to hear him say that. And obviously that's how it played out.
Yeah, you know, you could definitely tell that he heard kind of the noise about, oh, Jim Knowles needs to be on the sideline, this, that, because that is kind of a slight against him. Perry Aliano's no slouch, Zach. Like, I know it's his first year at Ohio State, but he's probably coaching some bigger games than Jim Knowles has. Like, he's played and should have beaten Georgia before 2 years ago. And then additionally, he's been in the college football playoff last year. Like, he's played in some big games. He's coaching against Notre Dame before. So, like, he's been there, and I think he's kind of been the forgotten man in all this. He went on to say when holding the defense holding the receivers, he said, I was more proud because we were tough, we were physical, they felt us. Yeah, we're talented, but that'll only get you so far.
That's what it is. It's the culture. It's the defensive culture. We saw it last year. It's not that they weren't talented last year. Mm-hmm. Ohio State was very talented on defense. They didn't have the culture, the aggression, the toughness, the silver bullets, right? We finally saw a silver bullet defense for the first time in 2 years. And that's what fans are most proud of, that the silver bullets appear to be back.
This whole press conference was so refreshing to hear, because all the stuff we were hearing last year about, like, kids not being in the right spot, this, that, like, coaches were blaming the kids more than kind of looking in the mirror and being like, you know what? And this one, coaches could take credit for the job they've done. And it's all about, no, the kids were so extremely tough, and we're happy to be coaching them. Zach, this one is from CJ. So it's not coach speak, but it's player speak. On the numbers not being there game one, CJ Stroud, I just want to win. I don't care how many touchdowns I throw, things like that. That's not our main goal anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some genuine, there's a genuine feel to that statement that they literally, CJ Stroud just wants to win it all. He wants to go down as a national championship winning quarterback. And I don't think he really cares about individual accolades. It's also easy to say that after you statistically don't play well, right? He didn't say that after throwing six touchdowns. He said that after not having the breakout game people thought he would have. So that's such a politically correct kind of coach speak, player speak answer after struggling a little bit. It's like, I'm not worried about stats. Why aren't you worried about stats? Well, because the stats kind of sucked. That's why I'm not worried about them. But if the stats were outstanding, it was by the same token, we saw Kevin Wilson late in the year last year touting, like, we're the number one offense in the country in every analytic. It's like, wait, now the stats do matter. It's like, I get it. It's press conference bullshit. But the stats don't matter when they suck. The stats do matter when they're good. It's all a narrative, and it is what it is. So I think CJ Stroud is genuine when he really cares about winning first. But that motherfucker cares about his stats now. He wants to win a Heisman. He wants to go to New York City. Like, he cares about his stats.
I thought it was funny, the anything to win except for don't worry, we won't run for a first down.
Yeah,
we'll do almost anything. just ridiculous. That's all I got on the coach speak side of it, Zach. I do want to scroll up, hit our super chats as we usually do at the end of the show. Remember to hit a like and sub as kind of we get this thing going. We appreciate how jumping the chat is. I gotta go all the way up, Zach. They've been getting active. Okay, here we go.
Chat's over here popping off.
Arguing. You see, we got Urban Meyer in here.
Urban Meyer in the building. What's up? Yeah. What's up, Herbs?
Everybody go ask Urban Meyer a question. We're trying to get this thing shaken. We're ready for an interview. Oh, Terry, thanks for the five. Chris, you got that Morris Day vibe going. Headman from the from Prince's group, the time. Well, that fine ass beautiful. Wait, what is that? Vacation? Give me
beautician?
That kind. Beautician?
Beautician?
Yeah. Thank you, I think. I don't know.
Go! Uh-oh, Chris.
We got a murder in the chat.
King Bronco in the building. If you don't know King Bronco, he is the most famous Michigan, not alum, but fan, clearly. And he comes in every now and then and drops just absolute knowledge bombs. Gems. Like this one here. I'll read every time he comments, I read it on air. He said, "Nah, Sarky Asian ain't Cat and Saban. It was where they was wet meats and an extra ham baby in it. And florists, like they was wanna to had beaned when it was a teal football put up. Austin Cry Beans." King Bronco is a fucking legend. A goat, some may say.
A true icon, man. Get him off the screen. What was it like watching Williams and Simon in 12?
It was really fun. I mean, Nate had some injury issues, but they both were relentless pass rushers that were very, very talented. It was fun to watch because they were high effort guys. They went extremely hard. I mean, like, where you turn on the film, like, holy shit. Yeah. Like they're trying to fucking rip someone's throat out.
I'm all here for it. Thank you, Nick, for the $2. If you have a question, drop it down below and I'll try to find it and hit it. Obviously, things get a little dicey when it's this many people in here. Thank you, Chris, for the $5. How quickly do we see the linebacker play help in recruiting? Ooh.
Oh, I think it's going to be immediate. I mean, you look at Tommy Eichenberg. He had 2 sacks in the game, right? In the first game, which means that's the most sacks by a linebacker at Ohio State since 2019 when Baron Browning had 5 and I think Malik Harrison had 3.5. He had 2. He already has outplayed the linebackers for the last 2 years in one game. Mm-hmm. So if Tommy Eichenberg can get some, you know, notoriety, you know, I saw he was the Nagurski player of the week. Like if he can be up for an award, be all Big Ten, God forbid, be an All-American, that immediately gives you a tool in your toolbox to recruit another linebacker.
Zach, if Tommy's an All-American, you're going to have to kick me off the show.
Well, and think about it, Chris, not only because that is a really, it's evidence that you can develop an All-American. It speaks to your resume and your competency as a linebacker coach. But even more than that, because of how awful the linebackers played last year, like mm-hmm. that dramatic of a turnaround shows you how good Jim Knowles is. And it'll be immediately impactful on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I do know that the Tackett Curtis, they're still in contact with him. That's the linebacker. I don't know if this cut up to go to the family. I'm dropping a Chris's Corner a little bit later today, and there'll be plenty of that. No, tomorrow, actually. There'll be plenty of that kind of on it and see what I can get on that front. Thank you, Nick, for the 2 top 5 most storied college football programs.
Storied is an interesting word.
Tricky word.
You would have to say Ohio State, Alabama, Notre Dame, USC,
Michigan or Nebraska. I mean, storied programs.
You're talking about, Michigan probably is in that list too. Yeah, that would be my 5. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ty, for the 5. If Ohio State finishes with the top 15 defense this year, how long do you think before Knowles will be gone at OSU? Do you think he'll stay as long as Ryan Day is there? Thoughts? Ooh, that's tricky.
I don't know Jim Knowles. It all comes down to his motivation, right? Some guys like Brent Venables, he was waiting for the perfect opportunity. And I see that in Jim Knowles, where he's not going to go take Boston College like Jeff Hafley did. He's not going to go take, you know, whatever, Tennessee like Greg Schiano did before it blew up. I think he's going to wait for the right opportunity to get that big time job where an Oklahoma comes calling or a Texas or some big time top 5, top 10 job comes calling, because nowadays you don't need head coaching experience. You look at these head coaches around the country. Lincoln Riley was a coordinator, got Oklahoma. Ryan Day was a coordinator, got Ohio State. Dabo Sweeney was a coordinator, got Clemson. Kirby Smart was a coordinator, got Georgia. Like nowadays, Brent Venables was a coordinator, got Oklahoma. This is the in vogue thing to do, is to hire a big time name coordinator as opposed to, you know, the guy from Iowa State. Like it's just, I don't think he leaves until it's at one of those massive jobs. And there's a lot of alignment that needs to happen to make that happen. So I think he'll be here for, you know, a good 3-4 years, maybe 5, until one of those jobs comes calling that he just can't turn down. He's making $2 million a year. What the fuck's he got to leave for?
That's just crazy. You know what I just heard, Zach? He's going to end up at Clemson or LSU. That's what I just heard.
Maybe.
T, thank you for the 10. Who called the offense in 2016 Fiesta Bowl, and what was the main reason we could not score? Go Bucks.
I don't, it's fucking, I think I blocked it out of my memory.
Were you calling it?
Fuck no. Ed Warner called was calling the offense with Tim Beck. Like, they called it together. Like, Ed called the run plays, Tim called the pass plays. And it was just, I mean, it was, everyone was a fucking train wreck. My guys played like shit. JT played like shit. Like, everyone played like shit. It was the culmination of the worst cultured offense in the history of college football. It was pathetic.
You should have had me out there that game.
Like, you would have done just as good.
Thank you, Gorgon, for the two. We appreciate you. Let me see. Let me keep getting them. This is a question about the Patreon. What tier do we need to be to see the film breakdown? I don't have the tiers in front of me.
So it's a kernel tier. The kernel tier or higher. Like, kernel tier is $20 a month. You get all film analysis from. We've done a recruiting breakdown. I'm doing game breakdowns. I did Jim Knowles' defense breakdown. Any video content is on the kernel tier. If you want to jump up the next level and get in the group chat with us, if you want to get on our VIP Instagram, kind of more behind the scenes look, more access, that is the general tier, the $30 tier and higher. So that's that. And Chris, remind me, I need to do my Mind of the Menace show, my personal show for the personal $10 tier. $10 tier gets all the additional audio content. Chris's extra show, my extra show that I haven't done yet, but I'll do this week. That all comes to that tier.
Perfect. Oh, Zach, I love this one. This one is straight for you.
Listen, buddy, I had the better view than anyone in the world, better than Jim Harbaugh. I was right on that fucking line. And that ball crossed the line. I hate to break it to you. Like, you can go to camera replays. You were in the stands a mile away, whatever it was. I'm standing on the sideline right down the line. I watched the ball cross the line, and then he got hit back. Like, he got the first down. I'm sorry. He was JT was not short.
Tovin, throw a like on the video, because we just gave you some free pub, you know, for that comment. And additionally, send it to your Michigan group chats and tell them that you just learned that JT was not short. thank you, Easy, for the five. Suggesting getting OSU gets their offense together. How do they fare versus Bam in the playoffs? Too early. We did this, but it's too early.
But I mean, Define gets their offense together. DeJuan Jones needs to get so much better to block Will Anderson Jr. And I don't. No one can really block him one-on-one. But even with help, like, they would. Bama's defense is legit. And so this receiver group needs to get going. The offensive line needs to continue to develop. CJ Stroud, it's honestly going to come down to who will do anything to win the game. Bryce Young will. We watch it. We watch it every week. I have not seen CJ Stroud yet. He would have to do that. He would have to become, you know, it would have to be his moment, right? His career defining moment where he just wills Ohio State to a victory. And I think it's very possible, but yeah, it's too early. We got to see how this offense improves, get some defensive depth developed. So much needs to happen to even consider slaying that beast that is Alabama, but it's possible. They have the tools. They just got to put it all together. That's all.
Zach, I just saw a comment that Bryce Young's listed at 6'1".
This feels right. I mean, I've never been in person with him, but he looks...
He looks about 5'10", 5'11". Bryce Young? Maybe,
you might be right.
If Bryce Young is 6'1", I'm 6'5", standing on business. I never want anybody to call me 5'2" again as long as Bryce is 6'1". Let's get the hell out of here, man. 6'1". The hell? I'm blown away. All right, Zach, that's all I got. I think that we had all the super chats. I appreciate everybody stopping by.
We're good. I appreciate everybody for popping in.
Oh.
I forgot to say, King Broncos. You want me to read King Broncos chat again?
Oh, we gotta find it.
Here, I'll find it. I'm on it. Oh, he also said this. Truth torpedoes. King Broncos throwing out truth torpedoes. He said, "Nah, Sarky Asian ain't Cat and Saban. It was where they was wet meats and an extra ham baby in it, and florists like they was wanna to had beaned." When it was a teal football put up, Austin Crybeans. I think we could just ride off into the sunset with the wise words of King Bronco in the chat. King Bronco, we appreciate you, man. Thanks for stopping by. Chris, appreciate you. Menace out.